Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliot Smith song. If you haven't listened to us before, in this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliot Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and welcome back. Firstly, thanks to everyone who tuned in to the previous episode with Joe Gilgan. We had lots of lovely feedback, so thank you for sending that in. It's really appreciated. And now on to today's episode. In this one, we're joined by the podcaster and writer Merlin Mann. Merlin is the man, excuse the pun, behind several shows, including Dubai Friday, Reconcilable Differences, Back to Work, and Roderick on the Line, which he hosts with a former guest on this show, John Roderick. Merlin's a big Elliot Smith fan too, of course, and in this interview he talks about seeing him play live, how he still turns to him when he's feeling vulnerable, and we cover his favourite song choice too. So we may as well get straight into it. Here he is, his Merlin Mann, speaking to Elizabeth Woodstanley.
Hi, I'm Merlin Mann, and I make podcasts and various other kinds of things for the web, and I've been a big fan of Elliot Smith for about, 21 years now.
And can you tell us what song you've selected as your favorite Elliot Smith song?
Yes, I will play your little game, Elizabeth, your little game where you had the poor taste to have me on very late in the life of this program when many of my favorite songs were taken. With that said, a real banger is still in there, so I am going to select St. Ide's Heaven from the self-titled Elliot Smith record. Can I give a little context on my Elliot history, just a little bit that might help a little bit? And why this has been so difficult for me. You've got me banging my brain. So what was it? Probably 98 or maybe 99 or so. Yeah. I mean, I'd heard some Elliot Smith. My friend Michael, who was kind of my Sherpa for all things music through most of my adult life, made me a cassette of, I believe it was, must have been 99, because I believe it was either Or and EXO. And EXO immediately grabbed me more as an album and is the source of like three of my favorite or four of my favorite songs. But funny thing happened later in 1999, which is my wife divorced me. And I was very sad. And I was a very sad little man. A little man in a big house, a little man in a big bed. And it was really depressing. And like a lot of people, I guess I'm drawn to, I don't want to say sad music, but like sometimes when you're feeling really bummed out music really works. And so I really imprinted on Either Or. That would be probably spring and summer of 1999. And every night, this is so morose, but every night I'd go to bed and the stereo in the living room would be on playing Either Or all the way through, which is, you know, it's such a mood album, but then it ends with Say Yes, this hopeful little like 2 minute song. And I drift off to sleep with the maybe one of the happiest Elliot Smith songs ever in some ways. Everything is exactly right when I walk around here drunk every night with an open container from 7-Eleven
in St. Ide's Heaven. So you mentioned, you know, the first three albums, you know, made a big impression on you, which obviously the self-titled album is in that grouping. I mean, to me, there's a lot of great songs on that self-titled album. Can you start to go into some detail about what's drawn you to this particular song?
I feel like it is a very good album. And like a lot of the albums that I really appreciate most over time, this is going to sound so lame and nerdy, but I'm a big fan of albums that are well sequenced, where you kind of can't imagine the songs being in any other order. Stuff like When I Pretend to Fall by The Long Winters or The Meadowlands by Wrens, albums that are just loom so large in my life. And you know that thing where you know an album so well, you start, drives my daughter crazy. I start singing the song before it's actually come on, and that kind of thing. And this is one of those where I think there are, to my mind, probably three songs on here that really jump out. In addition to St. Ide's Heaven, I would say probably, obviously, Needle in the Hay and Coming Up Roses are two that really grabbed me. This is not nearly anywhere near my favorite Elliot Smith record. That would be Either Or. But it really is a mood. And there's just something so extraordinary about seeing him live when he was still in his prime. I'm sure you've seen that wonderful Jem Cohen short film called Lucky Three, which I think was shot around the time Either Or was probably, I'm guessing it was around the time Either Or was recorded. And like, look, he's an amazing piano player. He's an amazing finger picker on an acoustic guitar. He does it all. He plays the drums. And there's just something so particular and intimate about his music. And I think this is, I enjoyed Heat Miser too, but I feel like this first solo record is where he really comes into his own with this particular style. Maybe something he couldn't have done so much in Heat Miser. I mean, Heat Miser in some ways is reminding more of like mid-90s Lemonheads in some ways, like much more like upbeat, you know, spiky punky stuff. And the stuff that he's recording in these small studios in people's houses is some truly extraordinary work. And it's so delicate. It's very muscular, but also very delicate. And it really, as somebody just said on Twitter a minute ago, really just tears you wide open. So yeah, this is a heck of a record.
St. Ides Heaven. Were you familiar with St. Ides as a beverage? Yes, as a malt liquor.
As a beverage treat. I'm glad you asked me that, Elizabeth. When I was in college, in liberal arts school, my main poisons were malt liquor and ephedrine, and boy did I love both of those a lot. So I don't think I was as all in as Mr. Smith on either stimulants or alcohol, but I was very familiar with it. And that song, yeah, I did know that. And but the song, coming back to it now after not thinking about it actively in a pretty long while, it's like so many of his songs, I feel like it really is a song about intense personal pain and also the sort of distorted perceptions that we get. There's all kinds of imagery that's, you know, about these very distorted ideas and almost like synesthesia in some ways. And on the genius.com page, it says stuff like, oh yeah, the light bulb breaking. Yeah, you can smoke meth out of a light bulb. But I'm like, I don't know. Okay. Seems like a little bit of a stretch. I think he was more of a drinking man, but who knows? Been out haunting the neighborhood, and everybody can see I'm no good. I'm walking out between parked cars with my head full of stars. As I went back and I tried to examine what it is that I love about it, it's that I think, like a lot of people, when you get to a bad place, you realize that part of your problem is your perception. And in this case, you know, I remember reading something on some graffiti in college that said, what is it? Alcohol doesn't work because real problems float. And I've always thought about that. And that's what this song really reminds me of, is that the things that he's doing to dull this pain and enhance his own perception is not helping him. It's not making him happier. And it, in this way, it feels almost medieval. There's that kind of medieval idea that like your sins are apparent to everybody in the community. Like, you know, somebody could get like gin blossoms on your nose or something like that. And he's wearing that extreme emotion on his sleeve, and the stuff that he's imbibing, presumably to take the edge off or kill time or do whatever, it's not helping. But ultimately it gets at this idea that everybody learns, which is that everybody else's pain in life sucks, but my pain is deeply personal, right? Everybody's a fucking pro. They got all the answers from trouble they've known, right? There's all everybody out there wants to like parse and filter your pain in a way that is impossible because it is so close to you. And then you get into this loop where now your perceptions are distorted and you're sad and you're in pain and now you're drunk. And like it all can be such a pitiful cycle that all of us get into in life. And I don't know, the way he shares that with us, I don't want to bust a gut, but I find it very moving.
I think one thing that he does very successfully in his songs is they're written in a way that they're very relatable. you know, I mean, he references the open container from 7-Eleven here, which is just, it's kind of a funny line. But, you know, as Americans, for sure, I think we all can relate to 7-Eleven and, you know, those times of buying alcohol there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a phrase, the very pretentious phrase that's actually, I think, very meaningful. My poetry teacher used to use in college. And in particular, talking about how you title a piece of verse, but really in every aspect of how you use language to, in some cases, talk about fairly ineffable qualities or the things that words really kind of fail you at. The phrase he would use is metaphysical distance. You have to have some metaphysical distance. So in less capable hands, it would be like, oh, you know, like that song in Scott Pilgrim, you know, you know, or the very short songs about I'm sad and you suck kind of stuff. But he doesn't. There's a lot of metaphysical distance. There's a lot of room in the song. And also something that I think is so interesting about him is it's so clear to me. You can obviously see this in the songs that he's covered, right? He covers stuff like Big Star. He covers stuff like The Left Bank. Obviously, he, to me, is hugely influenced by John Lennon in particular. And I think what's so interesting about it is it doesn't feel like a retread of other people's music. I mean, when he covers, I think he's covered The Zombies and stuff like that too. I mean, it really sounds like an Elliott Smith song. When he covers 13 by Big Star, it's, dare I say, heretically better than the original, which is pretty improbable. Because he really puts his own mark on it. And his style of musicianship is so distinctive. And I saw him live twice. One time was pretty good, and the other time was a total train wreck late in his career. But going back and looking at those live videos, I watched a live video yesterday of him doing Miss Misery, and he has such great articulation. You know, it's as much as it's kind of like a, you could lump this in with kind of mumblecore music. It's not like that. It's very specific in its imagery. It's very specific in the way that the notes are even fretted. The harmonies are very, very specific. It's hard to take apart the harmonies in some of his songs, the vocal harmonies, because they're just so beautiful and layered. So as far as your point, though, I agree with you. I think it is very approachable. I don't know if this is the kind of music my kid's going to fall in love with the same way that I did. But she's 12 and she's not obligated to like stuff that wasn't made in her lifetime. So, but yeah, I'm with you. And it is such a consolation. It's the kind of music you just keep coming back to. And I'll tell you what always gets me is at the end of Lucky Three, he plays Angelus, a flawless version of Angelus. And at the very end, the filmmaker cuts away to this shot of him just looking at the camera. And there's this slightest, like, shy smile right before it fades. And, like, I really just hold that moment in my heart. That's, like, so Elliott Smith to me. Like, he's just this very vulnerable guy. His emotions are out there. I imagine he was probably a pretty difficult person to work with sometimes. I don't think I'd want him as a roommate, probably. But I'm very grateful for what he put out. This song, I was kind of surprised this one wasn't taken. I'm relieved it wasn't taken because I think it really typifies this era for him. It's before he moves into the, I think of either or, well, especially I guess with EXO and Miss Misery. Like to me, Miss Misery very much could have been on EXO. I don't know exactly when it was recorded, but this is definitely from an earlier time. It's before the arrangements get a little wild. It's before the... before he's, you know, playing Chamberlain and stuff. It's before he's doing all that stuff. This is all pretty straightforward, like four-track recording type stuff, but it's got a huge impact. I think you know what brings me down, that I want those things you could never allow. You see me smile and you think it's a frown, turned upside down.
So you had mentioned that you sort of had really gotten into his music at a bit of a low point in life, and at that point hadn't really listened to his whole catalog. Have you grown to appreciate his work not just when you're at a low point in life?
yes. And I've also it really, even in just the last couple of days, going back and in my head, I don't remember like loving Figure Eight, but then I went back and I listened. I'm like, you know what? I did like this record. Like, this was, there's some really good stuff on here. And I mean, yeah, for sure. I've gone back. And, you know, another one of my favorite bands from the 90s and early 2000s is Sloan, this Canadian kind of, I don't know what you call them, power pop, fake arena rock, but great Canadian band. And we're all, I'll have a break for a while, take a year off, and I'll come back and I'll be like, oh man, Money City Maniacs is still so good. And I can always do that with Elliott Smith. And yes, even when I'm not feeling sad, but I'll tell you, when I am feeling very vulnerable, like I am right now, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I've been very emotional lately, and there's something special about music that can really provoke a very strong feeling, even if it's not about a particular thing. I do believe that most adults tend to mix up the signals with their very strong emotions, and most American, white American men walk around feeling angry and underappreciated most of the time, and I'm certainly one of those. It's nice to feel some vulnerability, and I was laying in bed telling my wife about this show. Sometimes in the afternoon in these times, sometimes we're like Charlie Bucket's grandparents. We just lay in bed and stare at the ceiling. But I put on Miss Misery, which is a song I've always loved, and I just started crying. I started like basically by the end I was bawling. That part at the end of Miss Misery where the chorus comes back, like it just like around like 250 or so, and there's almost this sigh when, you know, you miss me, Miss Misery, like you want me to, like that, that when that comes back in, it's just like, it just, it overwhelms me. And I, it's not any one thing. It's the same kind of feelings I got when I had a kid, where like, I found myself having these extremely complicated emotions, like realizing that this sort of like a circle of life thing where I'm like, wow, you know, every parent is a kid, and a lot of kids become parents, and like we're all connected in this weird way. And it's not about any particular thing, but thinking that thought could always just make me bawl. And Elliott Smith is like that for me, where there's something about his music, his death, just seeing parts of yourself in him. I don't think of myself as a self-harm kind of guy, but you certainly know everybody's had their low times, and it's, like I said, when we started out, I was always just really pulling for the guy. I always thought, you know, I hope he can find something that gives him comfort in the same way that his music has given so many of us comfort. And yeah, so I'm just laying there like Grandpa Bucket, just bawling. 'Cause everyone is a fucking pro, and they all got answers for trouble they've known, and they all gotta say what you should or shouldn't do. One of the things I do feel very strongly about him is that, okay, so let me put it this way. There's a school of American poets, I'm sure you've heard of, called the Confessional Poets. So that could be somebody like Sylvia Plath, could be somebody like Robert Lowell. But I always had a great affinity for the Confessional Poets. A lot of really screwed up Catholics with extreme mental and emotional problems, who would write this kind of very, Sylvia Plath obviously would be the sort of the poster person for this, but just this whole idea, like Robert Lowell, like writing these poems about like having to be, he's writing in the 40s, 50s, 60s mostly, but like when he gets committed because he has what we would come to be called, bipolar. And, you know, just lines saying things like, you know, it's terrible to think about all the pain I've caused the people in my life because I didn't have enough salt in my brain. And it's like, God, that's really a wild way to look at his situation. When he got on lithium salts, it really improved. You know, he stopped directing the orchestra and like cheating on his wife every spring, you know, going into like a fugue state essentially. And so I would put him to me very much in that tradition in some ways of the Confessional Poets. Because he externalizes, now I'm being really fancy, forgive me, Elizabeth. He externalizes a lot of interior ideas. And I think part of the, you do have to make yourself vulnerable to do that in the same way that, you know, you feel funny telling somebody your dreams because you wonder what that reveals about you. And I did not know the man, but he appears to have very little compunction about taking some of his most extreme feelings and putting them out there. I admire the courage that it takes to be somebody who's that painfully shy, but who's also that painfully in pain and is willing to externalize those kinds of things and say, I don't know if this totally makes sense. The moon's like a light bulb breaking. That's just what it is. Like, that's what this thing is. You know, love is not like a flower. but this is like that. This is what I'm feeling right now, and this is what I live with. And being able to put that over a fingerpick guitar pattern that is reminiscent of, like, touches on these great musical touchstones of the, especially the 60s and 70s, is really effective for me and makes him such a unique performer. The ones that were on, I mean, I have to say, like, I mean, I think Miss Misery might be, if you held a gun to my head, God forbid, Miss Misery might be his capital B, capital S best song. It's an almost a flawless record. You go and listen to that, or they call it the early version. It's very good. But what he accomplishes in that 3 minutes and 12 seconds, something like that, what he accomplishes in Miss Misery is absolutely astonishing to me. And the range of emotions. I do know I say best, but then favorites, Say Yes, absolutely. Angelus, Needle in the Hay are all up there.
A big thank you then to Merlin for being a guest on this podcast. I know he found it tough picking a song that we hadn't covered before, so we very much appreciate his adaptability and his extensive Elliot knowledge in being able to talk about St. Ides Heaven. And you too can also feature on the podcast. All you need to do is send us a voice note telling us what your favourite Elliot Smith song is to submissions@myfavouriteelliotsmithsong.com, and we'll play the clip at the end of the episode. That's pretty much it for today. Just a quick reminder before I go that you can find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram @myfaveesmithsong if you'd like to follow us. And please do like and subscribe to the show too on whichever podcast channel you listen to this on. Lastly, thanks again to Merlin Mann and Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for today's episode. Thanks also to you for listening to it. We'll be back with another in 2 weeks' time. And to play us out, here's Stephen Erskine from Arizona in the USA telling us what his favourite Elliot Smith song is. See you in a couple of weeks.
You know, this is really hard. Favourite Elliot Smith songs, there's so many great songs. And oftentimes, you know, I hear people picking the more elaborate, really well orchestrated, you know, big recording sound type songs. But for me, I think my personal most intimate favorite song of his would have to be Alphabet Town. No matter what type of mood I'm in, no matter where I am, no matter what else I was listening to before, directly before that song, it grabs me in such a way. It's a very imagery driven song. So you kind of imagine yourself or him maybe walking down a dark street with a girl who he knows isn't good for him. And there's probably trouble to come, but he's going with her anyway because he's got nowhere else to go. That song kind of makes me feel something that I've felt before, but it's like somebody's reading my own story back to me. So it really grabs me from the first second to the last second, and kind of cuts me to the core a little bit. Almost brings me to tears every time I listen to it.